Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. What an interesting market we've had in the last 15 minutes or so, as apparently we are in the market's worst fears with regards to China were a little overblown, and that has the news that the administration is going to be relying on CFIUS for their Chinese investment policy that has bumped us up here. And that is our lead story of the morning. We do have some other moves to discuss, other M&A action, a couple of earnings. But the main news of the morning is this headline out of Trump land that looks like this is the first step in maybe mitigating that trade war. So that'll be our hot topic of the day. We do have two guests joining us today as well. Our first guest is Peter Brandt. He'll join the show at 8:35. He runs Factor LLC, peterbrandt.com is his site. And then at 9, we'll be joined by Tim Melvin, author of Banking on Profit, to break down the banks for us. Joel, the S&P futures have been wild the past 15 minutes. Tell us what exactly is happening.
We've already had a 27-point range in the S&Ps. Big break overnight. You can attribute it to maybe China or a negative article by some hedge fund calling for a 2008-like scenario. We went all the way down to 2705.50, caught a rebound in the middle of the night, and actually we were just drifting lower again. And then Trump, not a tweet, but an announcement that they're going to use CFIUS perhaps to handle some of the technology trade disputes. We went green on the session, did not make a new high. With all this volatility, folks, I'm just going to concentrate on the close today, 28th, or close from yesterday. We hold that. We could go continue to go green. Yesterday's high, 27.35 and a quarter. Crude continues its big boost up 72 cents at 71 and a quarter. No major resistance until you get up to 71.73. That was a May high. Gold just sitting here at 12.60.70, up 80 cents, and silver up 9 cents here at 16.34. Triple D, you had to get caught in that tweet. I mean, there is no way that you could have reacted. That was unbelievable.
Well, it wasn't a tweet. It was just a message from the White House. What was it again here, Spencer? What is the message?
They're basically going to
came out 7:45.
Yeah, they're going to be increasing the power of CFIUS, the Committee for Foreign Investment in the U.S. Going to be deferring to that for their policy with regards to Chinese or foreign, but you know, mostly China investment in the United States, and so they're going to defer to whatever CFIUS says, increase their power, and not so much rely on, take it on a case-by-case basis with Trump. But deferring to them, which is definitely a positive sign for people who wanted not so strict restrictions on how or what China can invest in the U.S.
And that headline, we were down 20 handles. And I'm sitting here at my desk. It's like 7:43. Just, you know, prepping the show a little bit, just literally, you know, not doing much because the market wasn't really moving at that time. We were already down. I'm hedged, market neutral, and I'm looking, and I'm short like a stock. You know, I'm hedged with different things, but I'm short BABA, and I'm way up at BABA overnight because it was way down. And I just look up, and I literally look up my screen like a minute later, and I was like, down with BABA. I'm like, what's happened here? I'm like, what's happened with BABA? And then I look at the spoos and I was like, oh my goodness, what's happened here? So then I'm like trying to scramble, like, what's the headline? And then I see the headline, you know, Trump on the China taking it easy. And I'm like, oh man. So then I'm trying to like hurry up. And then Joel and Spencer are trying to call me to prep the show. And I'm like, go away. Girl, I'm trying to trade here.
I knew it.
I'm trying to trade here.
I knew it. I figured.
Like, don't call me right now. Holy cow. It's like, we just rallied 20 handles in like 10 seconds.
I was like picking you, like, okay, we, I hope you're okay. We can do the show today without you, but holy moly.
It made the 20-point move, and it really kind of, we've bounced a little bit since then, but it was the boom. Initial swing. You had like maybe 25, 30 seconds to respond, probably less than that. I mean, the bots are all over it. They were just scooping tech stocks left, right, and center. Alibaba was trading down, I believe, 3 bucks. Where was Baba when this news happened at like 7:44? Look at it. Bring it up on your pre-market screen. Where was it? Because I know I was up a lot of money, and I'm not now.
It's up $1.16.
But where was it? It was down like 3 or 4, wasn't it?
Let me see where.
Right before this news hit.
All right, I gotta pull it up. It was down
at 186 is where it was.
And now it was at 186 this morning.
Now we're at 192.
Yeah, so crazy move. You can see the violent upswing there at Baba, where obviously I was short overnight. So I'm in from like over 194, 142 price, and it's trading 188. You're thinking, that's pretty good. But I'm hedged with other things too. So some of my longs explode as well. I always trade market neutral. We talk about that all the time. Unless I've got a bias and I feel I didn't have one last night. So I was completely market neutral. Thank goodness, because it would have been sad to lose all that Baba profit and not make profit on something else. But regardless of the point here, the point being is that things happen very, very quickly. You have to be able to adjust as quickly as you can to new information. The market adjusts basically in seconds there. So the big rally is here. Where do we go from here? That is the question. So let's look at the queues. They got the beats 2 days ago. We kind of had a quieter day yesterday. It was an inside trading day for the markets. Thoughts here on where we go, not only for the queues, but for the S&P overall.
All right. Let me. I haven't looked at the queues in a while. I'm more S&P centric here. For the queues, I guess what standpoint you have to take, whether you're looking at the queues or the spoos or whatever, is Monday's low the low of the lows? Is that, we hit that on Monday. We didn't get there last night. Is that the key to the rebound? And, they tried to press it last night and they couldn't get there. And now, with that trading action that we had last night and this morning, more people are going to be stuck and more people are going to be convinced that that was a major bottom. So till we take out 2,800 in the spoos and the downside, you have to lean on that as a good level. On the upside here, I will not be convinced that we are going back up to all-time highs until we clear yesterday's high. That was 35 and a quarter, and that was right where last week's low was. So, your old support, new resistance, those are the numbers I'm going to be keying on in the S&Ps for today and the remainder of the week.
So I had a lot of different stuff ready to talk about here today because we were opening down 20 handles. Now we got to regroup even the show. But I was going to say, now let's start thinking about Deutsche Bank again. I'm still going to say, let's start thinking about Deutsche Bank again. It's 10:55 here now. I know it's based in the U.S., so the pricing is different. You have some currency effects in here. But regardless of all of that, on the U.S. basis, you are now making, or getting very close to the lows of the move. I think it's time to start thinking about this. I've said publicly that if Deutsche Bank, and, obviously in the articles that Ben Zinger wrote as well, I've said if Deutsche Bank goes under 10 bucks, I think the S&Ps start to get really nervous about a contagion effect here in our U.S. banks. I think our U.S. banks are really struggling to catch a bid for that reason, as well as a plethora of other reasons too. So I continue to remain bearish the banks. I think, you see a nice little pop here today in a lot of stocks, but there is some problems and some worries out there, guys. So I'm still somewhat skeptical. As of yesterday, I said I was skeptical on the rally. I'm still skeptical on this rally as well here. There are some things to worry about.
And also, is it today that we get the stress test results after the close and we'll be able to react to them on Thursday?
Yeah, I believe it's after the bell today.
Well, I'll tell you, if you're looking for some good results and everything and, you want to buy these banks, you couldn't ask for anything more. I mean, the XLF is bearing down on the low of the move. The Goldman Sachs is bearing down on the low. Made a new low of the move. Yeah, I mean, the street is definitely leaning bearish into this, you know, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what the results are.
I think he could get a relief pop. It's why I'm not short the banks. This is the only reason that I am not short the banks is because the stuff is coming. Otherwise, I would be short the banks here. So that's something to consider. You know, obviously, a lot of people are long the banks on valuation. I hear it on CNBC Fast Money every single night how cheap all these banks are, where they continue to get cheaper. And those tweets that I keep tweeting out there, that's sarcasm, guys. Like, it's hard to sometimes know whether you're serious or not serious when you tweet something. But I've been obviously bearish the banks. You've been listening to the show for a long time here. So when I say cheap bank stocks getting cheaper, I'm not saying go out and buy them.
I apologize. It's tomorrow is the release. It's not today for the second round.
It is tomorrow. Okay, so it is tomorrow, and then we're going to find out after that, you know, the payouts, dividend raises, buybacks. That's I've seen them rally hard on that before, so that's why I'm scared to be short the banks. That is the only reason that I'm scared to be short the U.S. banks right now. That being said, I think if you do get a pop here on these banks, I think it might be an opportunity to actually initiate some shorts. So I'm hoping for a nice pop and all of these banks here so that I can initiate some shorts.
Okay. All right. So let's go into like to the normal news and stuff that we got a lot to talk about. We can talk some biotechs. We could talk WWE. Where would you like to go,
Spencer? We can talk M&A in food. This is a hot sector. Conagra to buy Pinnacle Foods, $68 a share, $43.11 in cash, the rest in stock. And there we go, CAG4PF.
This is the reason that I sold Kraft Heinz, because you can see the acquirer, Conagra. This has been rumored for a while. Here you get punished because you're paying a premium for it. They are hitting CAG hard this morning, down at 36. To be honest with you, this feels a little bit overdone for CAG to be down 6% on this news. It was already rumored. You've got some support down here on the 35. So yes, the acquirer usually goes down. This is a little bit overdone, and it's actually because it's a partial stock deal here too. Pinnacle Food holders who were hoping for a big payday, not getting it. It was already rumored. It had already traded up even yesterday into it. Whoever got the memo yesterday. Anyways, whoever got the memo is getting punished because they didn't read the fine print. The fine print was it wasn't a great price to begin with anyways. Secondly, is it's a partial stock deal. So as the acquirer goes down, Pinnacle Foods is going to go down too. So believe it or not, we got a merger in the sector and both stocks are significantly lower.
Man, oh man, oh man, buying the stock at all-time highs. That is, I'd be hitting my ConAgra too. I mean, wow, really paying. I mean, well, actually, they're paying up or paying down, whatever you're looking at it. But boy, oh boy, I'm just going to look at the ConAgra here because that's going to be your leader. They whacked it down pretty good. Your pre-market low is 34.60, and you're getting a little bit of rebound. You're back at $36. You did have a nice run in the stock. All kinds of support, not all kinds, good support at 35.76. That was your May 4th low.
Jump over here, a couple other stocks to talk about this morning. We had Mergerland, but we've also had earnings from a couple last night. We might as well get the earnings out of the way. Let's go to Sonic from last night. It is trading down significantly. Your burger joint there after a ridiculous, and I want to say an absolutely ridiculous run up into this earnings. Stock was $24. 3 weeks ago, $36, up 50% in 3 weeks. That's the kind of stock I do not want to hold into an earnings report. Anyways, it's pulling back here this morning. We are down 7% here. Spencer, details for SONC.
Well, it wouldn't have been so bad if they blew the numbers away, which they did not. Q3 EPS beat by 3 cents, 52 versus 49 cents. Sales of 118 million, 0.3, which is basically in line with the estimate. Comps for the quarter were down 0.2%. The fiscal year EPS guidance, the range was narrowed, but still in line with the estimate. So in line pretty much across the board.
It's not good enough when you run up 50% in 3 weeks. So we're giving back a little bit of that run here this morning, but putting in perspective, I mean, this has been an incredible run. Why did Sonic run up that much? That's, you know, my question here, because this is the biggest run up for Sonic that I think I've seen. I could go back 10 years. I've never seen it run up 50% in 3 weeks. Never. So why? why is the question? Was there like rumors or something that somebody's going to buy them? What's driving this? Is there anything in the promo in the last 3 weeks that really is a catalyst here? Because I'm not following the story at all.
No.
I just look at the chart and I say, holy cow, that's absolutely ridiculous.
No.
There's anything significant?
No. I mean, there.
Chat, you can help me out here too because I'm not following the burger story.
They increased they increased their buyback authorization, but that's not enough to.
That's worth 50%?
No.
So, frothy, gone now. At least some of it.
Technically speaking, you hit the lows at 32.25 on light volume. You bounce back into the 33 handle. You just have to go to your daily lows here. I don't think that low is safe here. I'm looking at 31.90 perhaps as a potential entry point here. That was your June 11th low. And after that, it opens up another buck to 30.85. So those are some levels. And it just right now, there seems to be a little steady seller here right at the $33 area. Your highs since the after hours, since the report, after you had the little dump, was 33.10. So there's the levels to keep an eye on here, 32 to 33 in Sonic. And I've never had it. You ever had a Sonic burger?
I ate there just once, and I ordered wrong, I think, because I went and I'm the value menu guy. And I, you know, always have to go to McDonald's. I always order the McDoubles or, you know, the value menu because I'm cheap. And anyways, I went to the Sonic, and I ordered off the value menu, and the burgers were not good. And then somebody says, you never order off the value menu at Sonic. But I haven't been back. So I want to go back and actually try a non-value menu burger, and maybe it's going to be better. But, there's a lot of good burger joints out there. I don't know. So I wasn't impressed.
I like it. They advertised a lot by me growing up, and we didn't have any, but they advertised like every day. So I just, you know, when I got the chance, I had to take it.
All I know is when I watch those commercials and the food those guys are eating, like the pretzel bun and the hot dog and stuff, I almost have to take a Zantac after the commercial because I know what it's going to That's what it's going to do.
Can't even watch it.
Can't even watch it. We always try to get a little education in here during the day or during the show. Abner's boy has some questions picking up from yesterday. Dennis, is there any significance to patterns that trade in the pre-market? And also, do those who trade in the pre-market tend not to trade during the regular session?
Repeat the question. We repeat it slower.
Significant.
Brain's not working as fast as it normally can.
Okay.
You can tell them a little stuffed up.
Significant patterns of trade in the pre-market. If a stock is rising toward the open, will it continue after and vice versa?
Sometimes. I mean, that's the pre-market is really sometimes, you know, just – and it depends on volume again, too. If you have no volume, don't even consider the pre-market action to a certain extent. Something's traded 200 shares and it's trading up a buck, it doesn't mean anything. If something's traded 200,000 shares and it's trading up a buck, it means a lot. So really look at pre-market volume. So sometimes those trends can be can persistent there, can continue into the regular session. It just depends on a whole lot of other factors. I always say the trend is your friend. If something is trending higher in the pre-market, sometimes that trend can continue into the regular session. But you got to remember, 90% of your market participants don't even trade in the pre-market. So your big institutions usually do not participate. Why? You know, some of them might, but a lot of them don't because it's difficult for them to get in and out. Imagine moving around, a $20 million position in the pre-market. There's just not the liquidity there. And it's big money that moves price. So that's why sometimes, you know, the stock opens and it goes straight down from where it was trading pre-market because you probably had a lot of retail traders, you probably had a lot of smaller traders trading in the pre-market, pricing it up. And then you had a couple big guns that said, I'll sell it. And they knock it down. And that's the difference. So volume is very important to consider if you're looking at the pre-market action. But also, you know, consider that institutional traders usually are trading during the regular session because they need the liquidity.
Yeah, just
they
one
move price.
One comment on top of that. You know, if you're looking for a fade or a continuation of a trend, like we'll just go back to this Tiffany back when they had the report. I have no idea what the pre-market high was, but if you were considering any kind of short or any kind of, long follow through move on that day, whatever high it made in the pre-market session, it took that high out and kept on going. So it can be used for, a fade. Did it get overdone in the market? or it could be used for a continuation move. And Tiffany was an example of a continuation move. And then Dennis picked up a good one yesterday. I believe it was FactSet. That was trading lower in the pre-market. Dennis didn't like the chart, thought there'd be continuation, and it ended up closing right near the lows of the session. So not necessarily having the trade to put bids and offers out, but look at those levels before the open and then look for continuation.
I mean, it's more information, and you just got to take it with a grain of salt because there's a lot of other information that's going to come after 9:30. I mean, something just trending higher on light volume might not mean much. Something trending higher on a lot of volume might mean a lot more. So I definitely would look at volume when you're trading pre-market and use that as an indicator. And then just know your news. I mean, sometimes, you know, I like to think of myself, you know, as somebody who incorporates technicals, but also incorporates a lot of fundamentals as well. You know, you think logic. I try to trade off logic. And if I think, you know, well, I try to think what the crowd is doing, how the crowd's going to interpret that headline. And if the crowd's going to interpret it in a positive manner, maybe I'm going to be coming out and buying the stock. If the crowd, I believe, is going to interpret it in a negative manner, I might be selling it. So you've got to just, you know, read the headline to a certain extent too. Sometimes there's some whipsaw action chopping around, but when the dust settles, usually, you know, sometimes things trade off logic. Sometimes they don't trade off logic too, but it's all just more tools in your toolbox. And pre-market action is another tool in your toolbox.
And then the other question, Dennis, was, are you eyeballing IQ or HUYA at all for re-entry?
No, they're all broken. So yeah, you've had a bounce off those things. And yes, okay, you've got a tradable bottom here now. You could say IQ $30 the other day. If you're going long these things, I would not want them to make new lows on the move. So I think it's a more difficult trade now. The trend is broken. Yeah, you had this huge rise in HUYA. Now you've had a huge fall where it's basically lost 20 points in 5 sessions. Can it bounce? Sure, it can. But it's not as easy to predict here now, where before I felt like, you know, the trade was a little bit more easy to predict. So that's a difference, and that's where I'm sitting now, is I'm just on the sidelines on those stocks because it's not as easy to predict the next move.
Since my first attempt at shorting IQ was unsuccessful, I'm going to...
Well, it was successful. You just have the scalper blood in you for taking the profits too soon. Squeeze that scalper blood out.
I'm going to be looking for here is, what did you have, an all-time high here at 46.23, and you had a breakdown, let's call it 33, 13-point move, 6.5 of that. That would take you up to like 38, 38.5, anywhere near that area. You know, you get that, you're kind of on your way here. That 50% retracement, I'll be keeping an eye on that, because if you bought this thing above 40, you're kind of scratching your head and you're thinking, man, if this ever gets back to 40, I am selling. So we'll see how it does on the rebound here.
Hedge Seeker, another question. I guess we're going to educational segment. He says, and you know, if you listen to the show for a long time, I say a lot of things. He says, you're looking to trade with the crowd or against the crowd? Because he says, I thought we like to avoid the crowd. I like to avoid crowd. I like to predict where the crowd is going. So if I think a trade is crowded, yes, absolutely, I go the other way. If I think everybody is long a thing, and I think, you know, everybody is just, you know, too overly bullish, I will want to trade it the other way. But you want to predict to where the money is going. Where is the crowd going? So when you get new news, a new headline, I'm trying to predict, you know, how the market's going to interpret it, because that's where the crowded money is going to go. So that's the big difference here is, you know, I'm not looking to get into crowded trades. And, you know, if everybody's buying, I don't want to be a buyer too. I'm trying to get ahead of it. So when I see new news, new headlines break, I'm trying to predict where the big money, where the crowd is going to go, how they're going to interpret that headline, if that makes sense.
Looking for the turn. The turn in the market. That's what you're Sometimes. That's what you're looking for. Okay. All right. I guess we gotta go to WWE here. Wow. Put in the chokehold on shorts again here. Spencer, what's the news?
Nice pun there. I like it. This was the news that was reported months ago from the Hollywood Reporter that essentially is confirmed this morning that they got a rights deal for SmackDown and Raw with Fox, Fox Sports, and USA Today. The value of the deal over the course of 5 years is a little over $1 billion.
This stock just blasted off into orbit on that headline there last night. It continues to run. I actually tried to buy it right off the hop. There's just nothing in there. And I'm like, let's start a trade 70. I'm like, I'm not paying up $3 for this. I don't like chasing. 74.50, I guess I should have chased, Joel, in this case. Yeah. Anyways, I would try to go 67, 68. I'm like, there's nothing in there. So there was little chance to, I know maybe 100 shares trade there or something, but there was just nothing in the book. And, you know, then it started trade 70 and 71, started to get more active over that. But by that point in time, you're paying up $4 or $5. I'm not trying to anticipate something going up 8. That's what's happened, though. It's continued to go higher here. Big move here for WWE.
Just for Abner's boy here. So here's a situation where you spiked all the way to $79. Okay, that's where it's $4
Holy
higher.
Holy cow. Yeah. Nuts, they're crazy. These Momo traders, they go Momo, Momo, and then they go no-no at 79. Oops.
All right, so 79, and then believe it or not, your lowest level since you hit 79 was 73.14, or excuse me, we've got a little bit lower than that. We traded down all the way to 71.60, so I would call 71.60 mild support. But when you have a move like that now, like Dennis will not make this wager. I'm pretty confident that 79 is going to be the high of the day. That we might not even see that in the regular session, because first of all, if you bought it up there, you're caught. And second of all, you know, you're taking out the all-time high. The all-time high was by $67.99, so $68. You know, what if an institution was looking to sell this at 70 yesterday and they see this thing at 75, 76? And this is a hypothetical situation. So we'll see. And if he gets up and takes out 79, then congratulations. I'm dead wrong. But I think you're going to find some sellers in this one ahead of that level.
I'm not playing it either way here and trying to predict, because I've seen wild things happen in this stock. I mean, this was an $11 stock a year ago. It's crazy the move it's had. I think when you look at it and dust settles, or I guess it was 20. I'm lying. It was a $20 stock. Anyways, it's had an incredible run here. I'm not going to fight it. I'm going with the Nick Shaheen saying. We're giving you lots of credit here lately, Nick, but too high to chase, too hot to short. So I'm out.
This is wild, because this news was, I mean, it was first reported, what, like a month ago? And
there's one excuse to buy the stock.
And today was the confirmation. And, you know, a lot of times you see it, you know, I guess this was not a buy the rumor, sell the news thing, because it is ripping. But the one thing I want to highlight is, they were paid for the same properties.
By the rumor and by the news.
Their prior contract, WWE was paid $130 million a year, and they just quadrupled that amount for their new contract. So they quadrupled the amount for two of their properties. So, oh my gosh. All right.
That's incredible. Big news.
828, we're going to imbalance this here in a minute. I want to see them because they're going to be interesting. We're trading flat in the S&P. They're looking for a lead from somebody here to figure out whether we're going higher, lower, left, right. Who knows? Like we said before, we were beat up. Now we've rallied all the way back to flat. If you came in here right now, you're saying, oh, it's a boring day, but it hasn't been a boring morning. This market has been all over the place. There is some other news, though. We had GIS earnings here this morning, Spencer. Give us those numbers as General Mills is catching a bit.
Yeah, food is hot. 79 cents.
Food is hot. Look at that. I like hot food.
79 cents for, well, I hope you like a cereal too. 79 cents for 75 cents on General Mills, a 4 cent beat there. Sales $3.89 versus $3.81 billion. The fiscal year organic sales will be flat to up 1% was the range that they gave. The adjusted EPS for the fiscal year will be flat to down 3%. So nothing crazy, nothing great there on that guidance, but the EPS, they beat on the top and they beat on the bottom.
You know why? And just want to go back to Conagra here. I like the Conagra pullback to buy more too, is because exactly what you said. Food is hot. Here's a stock that, you know, is pulling back, a food stock pulling back 5% this morning. Yeah, they acquired, and yeah, there's some, you know, going to be some risk arbs, and there's some other stuff going on. But I don't know. I think, you know, this, if you look at this thing in a week or two, I think could be one that could get the losses back. So I kind of like this Conagra on the pullback here, just because what you said. Food is hot right now. I did sell my Kraft Heinz. The reason I sold the Kraft Heinz was because I'm scared if they do end up buying anything, they're going to get hit, just like Conagra got hit. But General Mills is a potential acquirer too. They're a big gun in there as well. So, you know, you could even see something else happen there in the M&A land. I don't think anybody's coming and buying GIS. I think they would be the acquirer in the case. So that's one concern if you're buying GIS up here. But it's a long ways down from where it was. And there's room, there's a gap up here. So hard to really say, oh, I want to short this food stock here, because it has come down significantly from where it was even a year ago.
Former high of the move was 46.65. We have eclipsed that, trading up to 47.36, and really have not backed off that level that much. So this one looks like got a little bit more room on the upside. The problem is, if you're shorting this thing here anywhere, what are you going to lead on? Unless you're just saying, okay, I'm going to risk 50 cents to make a buck or something, because you got a gap all the way up to 49.70. So gapping into a gap area. Let's see another one. This is a pretty heavily traded stock. You get a lot of indications from the opening price. Let's see. 2 days ago, it had a 536 open and a 5.25 low. It ended up at 46.01. And then 2 days ago, a 44.95 open, 89 low, and closed at 45.22. So not every day, but that opening print should be important here in GIS.
Jump over here to imbalances. GE, which had held yesterday. That was good. Good news, it held. It's up here again this morning. It's catching an upgrade. Oppenheimer? Oppenheimer upgrade GE, Spencer? Going off my memory here.
Been like an hour since I looked, but yep, Oppenheimer to perform, market perform.
So it's come up a little bit. You got another vote of confidence there this morning. It's trading up 293,000 shares to buy. You got some institutional action here. Next hurdle is 14. Can it get above 14? Got to 13.94 yesterday. You don't want to see it put a double top in there. You want to see it get above 14 and continue for a two-day move here, which maybe you're going to get. So I get on board here. You know, just I'm not getting on board, but just for a two-day move here, I think you're going to challenge maybe the 14 area. Let's see what it does there.
Right, and just trading up in the pre-market a little bit. Another day of holding the gains, I think, would be impressive for GE and GE shareholders here. People that are going to, try to think that they could get it back at 13 pretty quickly. Going to have to look. You got a gap between 13.06 and 13.39. We'll see what happens at $14. Yeah, just for our traders in GE, you had 1, 2, 3, 4 highs just above 14, from 14.06 to 14.14. So a little bit of room there, but you are running into that series of four highs from the middle of the month.
And then jump over here to AT&T, which is getting an upgrade to overweight from Morgan Stanley, and that stock is trading up in the pre-market, 36 cents, got 157,000 shares to buy. So somebody's excited here at AT&T.
Clearing your two-day high of 31.95, trading up 39 cents here. If you're looking for another potential target on the upside, I got a one high at 32.30 and then a pair of highs at 32.60, and that's just from a week ago. So we'll be keeping an eye on those levels in AT&T.
Jump over. I've got trades on the go, so I'm trying to lead, and I'm trying to trade. I'm trying to do a lot.
Well, we can take
41,000 to buy. Take the lead here, Joel, because I got too many trades on the go here right now as we chop around.
Okay. All right. Well, we
Square,
do
have talk Square here. It's 41,000 to buy. It's trading up here. Give me your technicals on that.
Square is trading up here, 63.44, up 89 cents. Potential target there. Could be your two-day high is 64.15. We're quite a ways from the all-time closing high. That was 67.59. If, in fact, you can clear 64.16, you got a nice area of not much resistance until your three-day close of 65.75. All right, Spencer, you want to take a break here and bring in our first guest of the day.
We're going to go grab Peter Brandt. He is the founder and CEO of Factor LLC. We'll be right back in a moment with Peter. All right, welcome back, everyone. We are now joined by Peter Brandt. He is the founder and CEO of Factor LLC. Peter, how's it going this morning?
It's going great. Going great. How are things in the Windy City?
Well, it's wild everywhere this morning, Peter. I can tell you that. Just Trump, this Trump market, man. Can't predict it. Can't predict it.
Yep, and we're actually one step better than the Windy City. We're in the Motor City. We are in Detroit. So
I didn't know that. I thought you guys were in Chicago. That's my error, and I apologize.
No, that's all right. I just had to stick up for the Motor City here.
Joel does do the Stocks and Jock show in Chicago, though, so that's where you might get confused.
That's right.
So we do have some links over there.
You ever been to Detroit?
Yes, a long time ago, and I've heard downtown is changing.
You got to come to the world headquarters of Benzinga, and we'll show you around. It's really improved. Well, always like talking to a commodity guy here, and you've been around a long time and done a lot of trading here, and really with the advent of the Globex system, actually Globex started, the only reason I know the exact date, it started on June 25th, 1992, because that was when my first and oldest daughter was born that exact same day. I mean, just talk about like how much the complexion of the markets has changed, you know, since the invention of Globex and, the 24-hour, basically the 24-hour futures markets.
Well, it's a different world than the world I started with. You know, we'd ring the bell at 9:30 and ring it again at 1:15, and we'd be done for the day, except for early morning out trades. And we have a totally different world in futures and Forex, largely dictated by HFT and algo programs. It's massive volumes that we see today are beyond what we would have ever imagined. In just a year and a half, I will have traded in six different decades, and that's probably too long for any given mortal. But that will be it. I'll shortly thereafter hang up the shoes. And I've seen just about everything when it comes to the kind of markets and the structure of trading.
So how have you, what do you think have been some of your keys to the adaptation, from, the open outcry where, someone comes in with a big sell order and everyone hits bids, you don't have that, the feeling of the pit. So talk about the transition and how you adapted to the screen trading.
Well, I was lucky enough to leave the floor. I know too many guys that stayed until the end and never made the transition where I left the floor early in the game to trade a sugar move and never went back to the floor. And so my whole style of trading evolved to more of a position trading, a swing trading. And I wasn't relying on trading against the bid offer spread. And for me, I think survival has come from knowing exactly what my trade is, having the patience to wait for it, and then the discipline to pull the trigger with the right size. And then again, the patience to let a trade play itself out. So, that hasn't changed. The need for discipline, the need for patience, that existed back when I left the floor, and it exists to this day.
All right. So all this tariff rhetoric going on and off again. We got the big news today as well from coming out of the White House. So just talk about, some of the commodities markets, what are most affected by the tariff rhetoric, and how you're attempting to trade these commodities.
Well, I'm not attempting to trade it, and I'll touch on that in a minute. But
okay.
Look at these corn, new contract lows, no beans, new contract lows, Minneapolis wheat, new contract lows. We're at new contract lows all over the place. It's interesting that you take a look at where corn and beans and wheat are grown, and there are states that are won by Trump. And everybody's focusing for the election on immigration and things like that. No one's talking about farm prices. And I think the Trump White House is in big trouble if for no other reason than egg prices are skidding along the bottom of a 20-year low in here. So I've been around enough to learn a couple things in trading. One is it's tough. I mean, it's tough making money in the markets. But the other one is the process of making money in the markets is there are periods when you make it and there are periods when you have to keep it. And that's sometimes what novice traders don't understand is they think, well, they've got to trade to make money. Well, I hate to have to make the same dollar all over again. When I make a dollar, I want to be able to keep it or have a reasonable chance of keeping it, so I don't have to make it all over again in another month or another period. And for me, that's kind of over time, I guess I've learned that there are markets that respond well to the way I look at markets and trade markets, and there are markets that do not. And I do not have a single, well, I do have a very small position on right now, betting that the Swiss National Bank is going to have to raise rates at some point. But other than that, when I look at the entire world of futures and Forex, I'm not involved.
Hey, Peter, Dennis Dick here, and I'm a fan. I follow you there on Twitter. Just talk about, you know, I like that what you were just saying. I like to make the same dollar twice. Talk about, you know, you've been in the game for a long time. Talk about risk management. Like, how do you manage risk on some of these trades so that you don't have to make that same dollar twice?
Well, I mean, for me, there's a given that I pretty much know year in and year out, and that's 15% of my trades are going to produce somewhere between 85 and 100% of my net profits. And the rest are going to be throwaways. And those good trades generally have a way of managing themselves. And so out of 100 trades, my challenge is to make sure that on 85 trades, I'm as close to break even as possible. And that's small winners offsetting small losers. And so, you know, I don't bet a lot when I go into a trade. Max would be a 1% of my nominal capital, but more often it's closer to 50 basis points. And you know, once I'm in a trade for a day or two, I don't like that trade to reach back in my pocket. And the reality is when I study those trades that really put in my bottom line, they usually go, they go immediately, and there's never any doubt. And so for me, risk management is really a matter of managing losers and letting winners take care of themselves.
All right, let's talk about those grains and they're making multi-year lows. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people taking stabs at them and trying to pick a bottom in it. You know, for the grains or for other commodities, once they start to go into trend, they really go into a trend. Like, what would you be, you know, what is it, technical analysis? Are you waiting for some fundamental news, or are you short and just riding them? But how do you pick a turn in some of these commodity markets?
Well, I'm not in any hurry to pick a turn. I don't like picking bottoms and tops. I like playing the game between the 30-yard lines. And, you know, I'll leave the red zone to other people to attack or defend. And so I'm very comfortable saying, I'm going to leave the bottom 10 or 20% to a season's lows and grains and highs to other people, and I'll try to focus on what happens in between.
You know, the market has been able to sustain here a couple of interest rate hikes. I mean, we got to historically low levels, so, you know, these bumps from a historical perspective are not that big of a deal, maybe on, you know, if you're getting a new mortgage or something, but just want to get your thoughts on the U.S. dollar in direction of an interest rates, and is eventually this rise in interest rates going to take a little toll on the stock market?
Yeah, you know, and I disagree with that. I mean, I think if the stock market gets hit, it's not going to be because of rates. You know, I took a mortgage out in 1983 at 14%. I mean, these interest rates are mild. You know, this economy can certainly handle 5-6% T-bill rates, you know, so people are basically bashing the idea that we go a little bit higher in rates and it's going to take a toll on stock market. I don't happen to buy that, frankly. The history does not bear that out. It does not prove it. But I do not see interest rates going up from where they are right now. My gut feel is that we're going to have a period here where interest rates are going to kind of just inch back a little bit lower. But we have seen the low of yields during this last cycle that began in 1982. The lows are in. We're trending to higher rates. I'm not sure how we get there. I'm not in any hurry to play it. But I do think that we've seen a cyclic change in the direction of yields from basically zero interest rates here or the negative interest rates in Europe back toward rates that historically have not been considered high. That's the direction we're going in. I'm not sure that trade is set up for me right today, but it is a trade I'm interested in, and I'm constructive on the U.S. dollar. Yeah, I'm not in it. I'm not in the trade because I'm just not taking stakes right now. But if I was forced to take a trade in the currencies, it would be some form of long dollar trade.
Right, so you got to have a few stocks kicking around in your portfolio, right? Perhaps using your technical analysis techniques and applying them to the stock market. Is there any stocks on the long or short side that you'd like to share with us?
No, there's really not. I mean, I have stocks sitting in a retirement fund, and those are stocks that, for the most part, I do not enter based on conventional classical charting principles. I tend in the stock market to be looking at stocks that pay dividends and have uptrend. I mean, give me a stock that has a dividend and at least is not in a downtrend. And it tends to be a stock that if it's a quality company I own. But for the most part, I do trade stocks in my trading account as well. I don't have a single position on there.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay. That's interesting. Just wrap up here with a couple more commodities. Whew. Talk about a market. What gets going in one direction, it doesn't stop. Crude oil market here. Big, you know, always moves off the news, off OPEC here, up 74 cents at 71.27. Any thoughts or projections for this rally in crude oil?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're closer to the top than we were at the bottom at $30 for WTI, obviously, but there's going to be a point at which the fundamentals are going to change again. We're already starting to see supply come back online in the Dakotas and northern Colorado. So, you know, I don't know where we go from here. We could get back into the 80s, I suppose, but for me, there's no chart signal, so there's no trade. But it's, you know, it's the one raw material that seems to be, you know, on the march right now.
Peter, okay. Peter, wait, I want to jump in here. Peter, I saw your tweet from a couple of days ago about, I don't remember if it was Bitcoin specific or crypto. I think it was Bitcoin specific. And you said something that caught my eye, and it was not a time to be a bear, but wouldn't be a bull either. I may be paraphrasing. I'm not sure I got that right. But can you outline for us your take on Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, let's take the assumption that there is a long-term fundamental story for Bitcoin. I mean, of course, this $1 million to the moon nonsense aside, but let's say that Bitcoin is the best expression of distributed ledger technology, which the people I know that really know the most think that that's probably true, that the legacy coin is going to be Bitcoin. Well, you know, we topped it close to $20,000. You look at where we are right now, we're up 70% from the high. Well, I go back to what I mentioned, that I have no interest in playing the market between the, you know, anything but between the 20 or 30 yard lines. Well, you know, I'm very close to that edge of the price scale in Bitcoin, which means for me, there's just no trade. Now, the charts are lousy. We have a proprietary trend indicator that we use with Factor, with the prop firm. That's solidly down. The charts are down. Personally, I can look at the charts and make a pretty good case for sub 3,000 Bitcoin. But sub 3,000 Bitcoin relative to 20,000 Bitcoin is I just lose any interest whatsoever by getting all bared up. That doesn't mean to say that there may not be a short trade at the CME here somewhere, but we went up in a parabolic fashion on a scale chart. You know, there's only been a handful of those in my lifetime as a trader where you go parabola on a scale chart. And, you know, usually when that happens, there's never been a bull market like Bitcoin that I can find. The only market that I can find of the same magnitude of change was German interest rates in the mid-1920s. It takes a long time then to digest those gains, and that's what we're doing. We're blowing people out. We're digesting the gains, and it usually takes a lot longer than anyone thinks. You know, there have been 70% corrections in Bitcoin along the way. The average peak to valley to eventually new peak in Bitcoin's in the history of it as an instrument is 89 weeks. That's closer to 2 years than 1 year. So, I'm not in any hurry. And so really, you know, if I think the charts indicate lower, I think the trend indicates lower, but we've come to the point where, you know, I'm not going to battle for the scraps that are left on the table.
Just real quickly, we talk about gold in our show, and, you know, market goes up, gold goes down. The market goes down, gold goes down, it seems. Safe haven, no more? Something, just not enough movement for you to trade? Give us thoughts on the gold market.
Well, I left the country on June 12th to go to Scotland, where I every other year meet with some really good traders, and we have some fun together and talk about trading styles and so forth. I was short when I left. I covered it when I left. I would have made a little money staying short, but I don't necessarily like big books on when I'm traveling, flying over the ocean. But I think the December of 2017 lows are going to be crucial in gold. The headwind, gold has big headwind. Gold's at 80 times the price of silver. It's at 1.5 times the price of platinum. You go on Twitter, all the global macro guys are long gold, and I think they're wrong. So, if I still was short gold, I'd still be hanging with it. But I think markets always provide a surprise, and the surprise in gold could be we go down and test the $1,000 level again.
All right. Peter Brandt has been on with us. Factor LLC is the name of his firm, Peter L. Brandt on Twitter. Peter, thanks so much for the time. Have a good day.
Been good, guys.
All right. Be good.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Peter. S&P's stuck up to 33.75. That is just shy of yesterday's high at 35.25. Let me reiterate, last week's low was 35.75. That is the key to the upside here in today's session. I also would say for the remainder of the week. Spencer, back to our agenda. And where would you like to go? We haven't done any ratings yet, and have we finished up earnings?
We did a couple. We snuck a couple ratings in there. There's a big one from Deutsche Bank here this morning. Marvel Technologies, MRVL, is getting upgraded here at Deutsche Bank to a buy. That is catching a big-time bid here in the pre-market. It also, somebody else had coincidentally put an overweight on this, too. Who was the other analyst there, Spencer? MRVL, we're talking.
Marvel was an initiation. Let's see here.
Yeah. It got overweight.
Yeah, it was Evercore with Outperform.
So you got Evercore and Deutsche Bank both bullish on MRVL. So you kind of got the double upgrade here coming, or it's not an upgrade, but at least a double bullish from two different analysts here. This one on MRVL. That is pushing the price up 4% here in the pre-market, getting back the majority of its losses from the last 2 days. Thoughts on Marvel Technologies, MRVL?
Oh, man. A little bit of overhead supply here. We're up on a couple thousand shares. I mean, I respect this move because, you know, you're trying to buy low. You're trying to buy on the cheap. So I respect that. Fighting the trend. To me, it's all about 2102. That was your two-day high. Haven't hit that yet in the pre-market. We take out, you know, 21, hold 21 for, you know, 15 minutes, a half hour. Then, you know, maybe look for your three-day high of 21.45. But interesting to see what happens at $21 in Marvel Technologies.
Any other ratings? There was a ton of them, Spencer. I mean, like, you're talking about 20 initiations. Wolf went nuts. And then you're talking, you know, there's about 20 upgrades, about 15 downgrades. A lot of smaller ones, though. Anything you really wanted to cover that jumped out at you?
I mean, there's a lot of smaller ones, and then some of the bigger ones were, like, earnings catch-ups, like Carnival. So what caught my eye? Yum caught my eye. Yum Brands was upgraded at BTIG to a buy. Jinko Solar upgraded at Roth Capital to neutral. That caught my eye as well. We mentioned the GE. Those were the only upgrades that really caught my eye. As far as downgrades are concerned, nothing too crazy there. Like you said, a lot of smaller ones, a couple downgrades in biotech from Citigroup, but nothing really that jumped out to me. A lot of initiations too, but mostly small companies, honestly, and a lot of neutrals today, I feel like. So nothing really jumped out.
There wasn't some huge, huge calls here from anybody this morning.
Nothing really jumping out to me. The Marvel one was big, the double or the upgrade and a half, I guess, if you want to call it that, but nothing really besides that.
And Marvel, Andrew's saying she thought it was bought out. Marvel is buying Cavium, C-A-V-M. That deal is still with Chinese regulators, and they're evaluating that. So CAVM usually moves. I think it's 2.1 the multiple or something. So basically, for every dollar that Marvel moves, for every 50 cents that Marvel moves, Cavium should move a buck, basically. That's okay. Your scarp.
Let's just go to a little, we got some drug news. We didn't even mention the biotechs moving this morning. CARA, Cara Therapeutics, on the move. Spencer, well, what kind of results did they get?
Yeah, their trial for their drug CR845 met the primary and secondary endpoints. Did shares resume yet? Yeah, they were halted at earlier, but they resumed at 7:30. And, great news when you meet both the primary and the secondary.
And John Dodson, I think, pointed this up. This was halted, and it was good news, and it opened up a buck. So, I mean, not a lot. So if you were keen on that opening print of 1750, let's say you took no action there, then it went down to 1721. When it came back up through that 1750 open, this baby was gone. Went all the way to $23 even. We're starting to back off a little bit here. So keep an eye on that pre-market high at 23. But this one, if you would have been quick on the trigger here, you could have bought it up only a stick and watch it go to $23. Also, there's some more drug news. I think RKDA is trading up here. That's trading up $1.87. Did they have a successful trial, or was it an agreement or something with somebody?
Arcadia Biosciences, this is an agreement with the Farmers Business Network to expand their grower base across Arcadia's family of wheat varieties, I guess is what this is.
I'll just tell you the surge on this one took it up to 1070. That's your pre-market high. Since you made that high, you're just kind of backing off, trying to find support here at 970. So you got a target on the upside. Still holding on to the gains. Have a ways to go to fill the gap. If you're looking for a gap fill, you need to get down to the lower $8 handle. 813 was yesterday's high. Dennis, we got a 9 o'clock guest coming on today. I'm sure you're going to be busy, but we have Mr. Tim Melvin coming on.
I always like listening to Tim, so I will definitely be listening because he has some good stock picks usually.
All right, but just what are your keys here? I mean, it's like, is the trading day already over?
You know what? It's just getting – this one is interesting because you've had so much chop. I think it's going to be wild. You have oil stocks very strong, continued rally here in oil this morning, so that is lifting all oil stocks here in the pre-market. Banks are going to be interesting here too. Spinner alerting us the TLT is significantly up. That is usually bad for your bank stocks. So not surprisingly, Bank America, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Morgan Stanley ticked, but Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, all trading in the red here this morning. Also, our Deutsche Bank indicator says sell banks too. So I think there's some reasons to be bearish the banks here once again. Only thing is the wild card is tomorrow they're coming, so some people may not want to be short into those stress test results. I believe they come after the bell, though, so they probably have another session here yet again. So there is a catalyst to drive the banks here coming Thursday night. That being said, I think it could be a rough morning here for the banks.
All right, while we let Dennis go, I'm going to take a break and grab Tim Melvin, author of Banking on Profit. All right, welcome back, folks. Pre-market prep, Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanin on now with Tim Melvin. He's the author of Banking on Profit. Tim, how's it going this morning down in Florida?
Oh, it's fantastic. Nice, hot, muggy start to the day. That's just the way we like it. Easy price to pay for the snow that you guys will get later this year.
Okay. I mean, it's a little muggy here right now, too, I suppose. All right, Tim, are you watching, or did you watch the stress test results? Is that something you pay attention to? I know you mostly follow the smaller banks, but does the stress test, is that something that you watch?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you're investing in banks, you have to kind of watch what's going on in the big banks. They are 80% or more of the market, so you kind of need to know what's going on. And, you know, the problems that develop there will eventually spill down to the smaller banks. So, yeah, we keep an eye on what's going on with the stress tests. And we've been watching it very carefully last week. And then, of course, we'll have part two of the results tomorrow.
And, I mean, these financials have just, you know, peaked in January. I don't know if you want to use XLF or whatever index you're looking at. I know you study smaller banks here, but, you know, the hope is, you know, dividends and increased dividends and buybacks and everything. And if, like, you look at a chart of, like, Goldman Sachs here, I mean, this thing has been basically straight down since January here. Just looking at the big banks in general, have all these interest rate hikes already been, you know, baked into these stocks, or the economy starting to slow down? What are you looking for good news for some of these big banks to have a reversal?
For the big banks to have a reversal, I really don't know what it's going to take. We're going to see a lot of dividend and buyback announcements after tomorrow's results because everybody passed, okay, last week when they issued the pass-fail. J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs, they were close to failing, but they both also questioned the Fed's methods and said they'll be fine when the capital plan results are out today. So business is okay, but where's the growth coming from these, you know, giant banks? Because even with the SIFI limit being raised, if you're over $250 million in assets, you can't do acquisitions to grow. The economy, if you look at the long-term estimates from the Fed, you're looking at 2% and below for the next several years. Where's the growth?
Okay. So
I think that's what the big banks are facing.
Okay. Yeah. Just, the economy's humming along, but just not strong enough to validate, higher stock prices. And for me, I mean, I look at the financials, the JP Morgan, your Berkshire Hathaway, Bank America, those are all big components of the index. So, the tech has really led the charge. Talking of the smaller banks now, there's still been, been a little bit quiet with the mergers and acquisitions. Is there any regions of the country here that are catching your attention with some of the regional banks?
With the region, I'll give you one big regional that's actually big enough that everybody can trade it. I think Fifth Third, based in Ohio, and of course branches all over the Midwest, they're the first ones back into the M&A pool once the SIFI limits were raised. I like management there. I always have. Joel, I don't know if you remember, we were actually huge buyers of this back in 2012, 2013, because we just saw a lot of value in this as well. And earnings, only 1.3 times book. They just raised their dividend by 12.5%. They're expanding into the Chicago market. So that's a larger regional. And remember, I've got much longer time frames than most folks that come on here. But I think long-term ownership of that stock, I think you'll do okay.
Okay. Are there any regions of the country that are concerning you a little bit here? You know, we had, you know, the hurricanes in Houston and also in Florida. They've seemed to weather the storm pretty well. Any comments on those regions?
Well, you look at we talked about this during the hurricanes last year. You know, the hurricanes are kind of if anything, they're a net positive for the banks in the region because the insurance companies are going to come in, pay off most of the loans on the homes that were destroyed. And guess what? There's going to be new loans for the rebuild in many instances. So it's not a huge blow. They just have some business slowdown. If you look at Home Bank shares, you know, their business in Florida slowed down a little bit. They had to close a few branches. But net, it was actually probably a positive for them. So looking just at the general banking industry, do I see any section that concerns me? No, I don't. And sometimes it concerns me that I'm not concerned, but credit conditions are good. Some upticks from very low levels in credit cards and car loans, but they're moving up from very, very low levels. So far, bankers are resisting the urge to do anything stupid. They're bankers. That will change. But it's not happening yet. So the industry itself is in great financial shape.
Tim, what would be something stupid?
Going back to the stupid kind of home lending you saw in 2007 or, you know, in the previous good banking crisis, making unsecured loans to foreign countries or at dubious institutions, you know, if you remember, the original Argentina default was back in the late 80s, early 1990s, and that was just because the bigger banks were making stupid loans to South America. So looking out there, we're in a lower interest rate environment. They're coming up a little bit, but the stupid happens when you start to reach for yield in your loan portfolio. So a bank that's only done commercial real estate lending decides they're going to get into commercial and industrial lending. That's stupid because that's a really special in the lending. So there's any one, you know, number of wonderfully stupid things bankers can do to wreck the industry. And they'll do it. I mean, every 15 to 20 years, they're going to do it. We're going to have some type of problem in the banking system, but we're still a long way away from that right now. So the industry's just in fabulous shape.
All right. So let's look overseas here. We like to talk about Deutsche Bank here and pressure on that European bank. Not quite at the lows that you had in June, where it got down to 10.57, getting dangerously close to that low, trading at 10.47. You know, these banks have come out and said they don't have a lot of exposure to it. Is there any concern here with the European banks and them rolling over, you know, effect on U.S. banks?
None, especially in the markets, you know, where I play. You know, my typical bank has four or five branches in some rural county here in the United States. So whatever happens to Deutsche Bank, they don't really care. And so neither do I, for the most part. I mean, I really don't follow it. I don't think there'll be a significant spillover or asset loss problem coming out of the European banks as far as the U.S. banks are concerned.
Okay. All right. Let's see if we got any symbols in the chat here to take a look at. Let's see if we got any banks popping up. Not right now. One thing I just wanted to ask you about, since me and you are like the only horse racing fans out there, Justified winning the Triple Crown. I mean, I don't know. He didn't run against the best competition. So, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's you know, last year American Pharoah ran, and he ran against really good competition, and the Triple Crown was quite an achievement. I don't, you know, Justify's a great horse, but I don't think he was running against fantastic competition. I was kind of hoping he wouldn't win the Belmont because I didn't want the back-to-back Triple Crown winners, because I think it took a little something away from it. I don't think the best horses were necessarily in the three races this time around.
Okay, before we let you go, TJ Mosley wants to know your best regional banks here and if you have any smaller banks that are on your radar.
I got lots of smaller banks, and we won't talk about those because they're too small. But I'll give you one regional, and this is one I tell everybody. The chairman of this bank actually changed the way I think about bank stock invested
really?
A few years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, I said his bank stock was too expensive, so he called me at home on a Saturday to talk to me about it. And this is John Allison of Home Bank Shares out of Conway, Arkansas. Now, John and his partner, Bunny Adcock, took this bank from $25 million in assets in the 1990s to over $14 billion in assets today. They're the ultimate growth bank. They've grown by acquisition and organically, but they are best acquirer of other banks on the planet. That's Home Bank Shares of Conway, Arkansas, HOMB. Mr. Allison told me a couple years ago that he was on the 250 and 2 plan because he's the largest single shareholder of the bank. And I said, what are you talking 250 and 250 and 20, I'm sorry. And he said, we're going to get to $2.50 a share, get Wall Street to put a 20 multiple on that, and I got a $50 stock. I'm not betting against the guy because he's never not accomplished something he told me he would do. So I really think this stock over the next few years is going to double. I've met several members of their senior management. They were trained by John Allison. They think like John Allison, and they don't think of themselves as bankers. They're business people who happen to run a bank. That's the one growth regional that I think really everybody should own.
All right, we'll keep an eye on HOMB.
Tim Melvin, Banking on Profit, is his newsletter. You can get it on MarketFi.com. Tim, thanks so much for the time, as always, and have a good rest of the day.
Enjoy the day, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, it's going to be it for us. So that's our show for Wednesday. As far as tomorrow's show, I am going to be in Philadelphia. at the headquarters of Mark Chaikin and Chaikin Analytics. The plan is for Mark to join me on the show tomorrow. I intend to be on the show regardless, but the plan is, the hope is that Mark and I will be able to do the show from his office, and I'll get Mark on video. We can all see his pretty mug as we talk about the market. But I still plan to be with you, even though I will be remote. Joel and Dennis will still be here as well. If you want to catch any part of today's show, you can do so on our podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play, or just rewatch the show on YouTube. Hope you all have had a good morning and you have a good rest of your day. And we'll see you folks on Thursday.